When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Aaron Sagers, and this is Talking Strange.
Hey there, spooky nerds, and welcome to Talking Strange, the paranormal pop culture show. I'm your host, journalist, author, researcher of weird things, Aaron Sagers. You can also catch me on 28 Days Haunted on Netflix and Paranormal Caught on Camera on Travel Channel and the Max streaming service. And actually, big news, because we've been filming the seventh season of Caught on Camera, and that is now set to premiere on April 21st. So keep an eye out for that. It's a great season. So this episode, we're talking about Sasquatches with Sasquatches. Have you heard about the new movie Sasquatch Sunset? If not, I'm going to tell you about it, because here's the synopsis for the new flick. It's in theaters now. In the misty forests of North America, a family of Sasquatches, possibly the last of their enigmatic kind, embark on an absurdist, epic, hilarious, and ultimately poignant journey over the course of 1 year. These shaggy and noble giants fight for survival as they find themselves on a collision course with the ever-changing world around them. Starring Riley Keough, Jesse Eisenberg, Christoph Zajac-Denik, and written by David Zellner and directed by David and his brother Nathan, who actually also appears in the film as the Alpha Squatch. The movie is weird as hell. I saw it a couple weeks ago, went to the premiere in New York City. It's funny. It's strangely beautiful. It's quite emotional. It's moving, even tense at times. And perhaps it is revealing that it's also produced in part by Ari Aster, director of Midsommar and Hereditary. So maybe that tells you a little bit about the kind of flick this is. So I recently spoke with the Zellner brothers and Jesse Eisenberg and Christoph Zajac-Denik about the movie. So let's get to it. Sasquatch Sunset, my first thought is thank you for making me laugh and then ripping my heart out of my chest. I had a lot of emotions during this film, and I did not expect that heading into Sasquatch Sunset. Is that something you're hearing a lot of, that this is like made people feel things?
Yeah, that's the most we could ask for. We wanted to, you know, explore the full spectrum of the Sasquatch condition, we felt pretty good about the comedic aspects of it in terms of how people respond, but it's been really nice that people are connecting with the poignant moments as well.
Right. And Jesse and Christoph, I want to start with you about what kind of familiarity you had with sort of Bigfoot and Bigfoot lore before heading into this production. Was there any kind of childhood interest in it? And let's face it, the Patterson-Gimlin film is perhaps one of the most famous pieces of footage, honestly, of all time. So what kind of familiarity did you have with this material?
Yeah, I feel like as a kid, I loved the Unsolved Mysteries show, and I feel like there was a Sasquatch episodes on that. And so that's really where I think I remember seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film. And yeah, as 5, 6, 7, I instantly fell in love with it and completely believed. And if I ever went on any, you know, Cub Scout camping trips or something like that, or I was just in the woods in Michigan where I lived, I always was hoping I would see a footprint or like find some fur or so, I don't know, just whatever you could imagine. Like my brain was just, you know, always looking for that and hopeful that I would come across something Sasquatch anywhere.
Yeah, well, I know you grew up in Detroit area, and up there in the Upper Peninsula, the Upers, they've got a lot of stories about Sasquatch up there, so it's kind of rich in the lore in Michigan. Maybe not so much in New York City, maybe outside of New York City, Jesse. So how about for you?
Listen, we have a lot of crazy characters in this city, but no Sasquatch. Yeah, I was not familiar with the mythology. I knew the Patterson-Gimlin footage, but I didn't know what it was from or what it was about or indicating, but I just knew it because I must have seen it because it's so ubiquitous and it's what we all think of when we think of Sasquatches. And then I just like, I fell in love with the mythology for the reason that like it really does like link us to the natural world in a way that feels so, like important. I think the reason it has such like a hold over us as a species unconsciously is that it makes us feel like that connection to nature is possible. When we were shooting this movie, we were shooting like in the actual locations where the Sasquatches are believed to be. And we were filming with a crew, many of whom were like Sasquatch obsessives and followers and like real strong believers in the mythology. And so I kind of had a sense that it's really important for some reason. And what I've kind of alighted on is that it like just gives us a connection to nature that we are constantly denying and dismissing in our modern lives.
Yeah. And it's funny. I don't know how much prep they give you on the various journalists and whatnot, but outside of entertainment journalism, I also do a lot of actually produce and host paranormal TV shows. So I've done a lot of talking about Bigfoot, and I know you guys filmed in Humboldt County and up there in Willow Creek, so I very much got a kick out of that. As far as Sasquatch in New York City, if he's probably in Brooklyn and he's using lots of like beard wax all over his entire body.
Small batch, and that's what people are into now.
Organic.
Yeah.
And David and Nathan, I know that you guys very much grew up in the Texas area or have operated out of the Texas area quite a bit. And I've read that you had this fascination with Bigfoot and obviously the, you have the Sasquatch Birth Chronicles, right? But was it your childhood fascination with Sasquatch? Was it, okay, this is just a gag, a goof, something in Unsolved Mysteries and In Search Of, or was it this allure of like this might actually be out there?
I don't know, it was maybe somewhere in between. We were just fascinated with it as part of like the cultural zeitgeist. It was just both in terms of well, it was like it's part of like it's a part of American mythology, that's our I don't know, figure our biggest myth in that, in terms of it, anything supernatural in that way. And but then also just growing up, it was such a big part of pop culture and TV and film, especially when we were kids in the 70s and 80s. So it was just something we've always been interested in. And then we'd some shorts with Bigfoot and that sort of thing, but initially it started from just talking about how all the footage that you ever see of Bigfoot is just of it like walking. It's either walking or hiding, elusively, in the woods. And we're like, well, what else? Why is all the footage that's aggregated just of that? Like, what if it's supposedly out there and we're catching all this footage, why is it doing, nothing else but that? And what else? And then it just became, just an inside joke with us initially, like talking about what else it's doing. And then, but then that, that kind of one idea led to the next. And we started, developing the story from there.
Do you want to add anything to that?
No. I mean, yeah, I would just add the same.
Something I appreciate about the film is that, look, it's really easy to take this notion of Sasquatch and be like, all right, that's just some rednecks in the woods that are seeing this stuff, or sort of like with UFO sightings, people in trailer parks, which is very dismissive and which I don't agree with. Then you kind of think like, man, this is a lore that's been told amongst indigenous people, First Nations people, for centuries, long before the white folks sort of showed up in this area. And something you guys do really well in this is you kind of, without being like a wink and a nudge of, hey, look, we did our research, you're doing the knocks, you're showing these structures, it's kind of tree structures, you're doing the a-whoop, the sound. Did that kind of lend itself to sort of, I guess, the authenticity of the feeling of the film, like sort of like, okay, yeah, we're really kind of in a way reflecting what people really say about this without it being a goof.
Yeah, we didn't want it to be a goof. We wanted to approach it with a level of sincerity. Take something, that's that is this thing that's mythological or supernatural, you know, and then treat it with a certain reverence as kind of an entry point to be able to relate to the material, you know, to these creatures on a human level. And I think, because, you know, we've talked about this a bunch, all of us, about what is it why did the mythology, you know, around Sasquatch, or why has it been around so long? And is it like this need, like Jesse was saying, this need to connect to the natural world, how it represents kind of the gray area between, you know, human and animal behavior, all of those things that and like you're saying, why all over the world there's very similar, you know, myths with striking similarities of, you know, about the man in the woods, you know, kind of folklore, and what is it about that like culturally have needed to where that's like developed independently of one another.
Yeah. And actually, just for a point of clarification, it's very hard to pin down when this is sort of set, what time frame, and especially initially, and it has this sort of feeling of like a land before time, before humans really walked the earth, which I like. And then we get kind of indicators. Is there a year that you were kind of setting this around? Where does this exist in time?
I mean, maybe from some things later in the film, it could be the, you know, like 1991 or
very specific.
But you know, it's somewhere in the modern world.
Yeah, that's right. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I'd forgotten about that specific call out to my childhood.
I think we liked the idea of, since you're from their point of view, and like they're from their point of view of especially like what their experience with humans is, which is nothing. It's kind of like a little bit of discovery of the impact of humanity on them through their journey. It made a lot of sense to keep the beginning very vague as to, you know, it could be that area is so primordial anyway, and it's such crazy ancient trees that are thousands of years old. So it kind of really from the start makes the audience in their universe and in their world, you know, like you're not reminded about timer as humans would.
We're not on a human timetable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The animals don't care what time it is.
Right. Well, my dog does when it's dinner time and time to go out. But Jesse and Christoph, I understand that you guys went to this Sasquatch camp, and I know Jesse, you brought in your miming instructor, and your characters, we're seeing their personalities really come forward in the way they move and the way they vocalize. And they're both these, you know, let's say missing link. I think that might be a pejorative phrase for Sasquatch. I don't know. But they're existing in this in-between, and some seem a little bit more ape-like, and some seem like they're on the cusp of, you know, achieving more of that humanity. Jesse, your character in particular, what were the ways you were thinking about how to distinguish yourselves from one another while also showing similarities of this pod as a family and also as these creatures? Jesse, you want to start with that, and then Christoph?
Yeah, my character is written by by these guys as like a as like the kind of the thoughtful kind of beta thinker, like poet almost, and like when you're doing a part like this, you're kind of like trying to grasp at anything very, very specific so that, you know, you can kind of express it under these unusual conditions. And so I just remember like the first day, it was just the first scene or the second scene we shot on the first day was this beautiful scene where we had butterflies and we were kind of playing with the butterflies and holding the butterfly up to my face and kind of like thinking about it, and like as the Sasquatch, kind of like both curious about it, but curious in a way that was not like human curiosity, but kind of like this almost familiarity because the natural world is more familiar to them. Like it just imbued me with the sense of like, you know, a character who's like kind of open to the world, who's hopeful, who's interested in others, as opposed to like definitely the character Nathan plays, who's this brutal, self-centered, like just driven by his own immediate needs, irrespective of what the others need. And so for me, that's kind of how I thought about the character. And then it made sense. And David wrote a perfect script. So it was like, it made sense. You saw, oh, he had been thinking about this. I didn't read this initially, but now that I'm doing the scene, I realize it's in line with the thing I've been trying to do this whole time anyway.
Yeah. Nathan, your character is very much like your alpha is very much a jackass. He's a jackass Squatch.
Yeah. He's kind of like the more stereotypical what people would expect of a Sasquatch being, you know, or an alpha male.
I don't know. I grew up with Harry and the Hendersons, and he was the lovable Sasquatch. Yours is like very much just alpha silverback kind of.
Yes, very silverback inspired for sure. Yeah.
But Harry didn't have genitals.
That's true. Yes. Jackass Squatch has that over Harry.
We love the design of Harry though. It's incredible.
Oh yeah. Well, and I'm going to touch on that in a minute. But like Christoph and Nathan, you can kind of speak to that as well, obviously. But sort of distinguishing yourself as a character while also fitting within this kind of pod of Squatch.
Yeah, I think the Sasquatch Bootcamp was and the videos that they David and Nathan sent were so informative for me, and it was great practice because like we would have Zooms and then I would be, you know, strolling around my room and my house, you know, just like a Sasquatch. It was fun. It was really great to just kind of like embody this physicality. For my character, I wanted to be as childlike and curious and rambunctious and a little dim-witted and you know also somewhat exploring like different social realms per se, because I really just wanted I wanted the inhibitions to be you know done away with and just try and be as childlike and kind of needy at the same time and just really, you know, strike that balance for my character.
Along with the movement training, did you guys do a whoop training?
Yeah, that was a part of it for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lauren, the movement coach, he helped us with the movement training and then also with the vocalizations as well. And we talked a lot about when certain vocalizations would make sense and if they should be high or low. And honestly, I think after, you know, the first week it became intuitive really what exactly. We wanted to do. Like it wasn't something that we needed to confer on all that much. It was like, oh yeah, this makes sense for here. So yeah. we're gonna do this.
Yeah. David, I was curious about, I've seen this in another article by Perry over at Collider, I believe, but I co-signed that at some point I would like to see the script on this just to see how you were writing out, okay, and this is what the Sasquatch is saying in this moment when he's whooping. Just give us a tease of like, what did that look like on the page?
Oh, well, it wasn't presented as a dialogue like with grunt, grunt, grunt or anything like that. It was, we just tried to be, you know, because there was not an easy comp, you know, that we could present this film as being, it was, you know, it's just our job, you know, from the outset to make the, you know, the tone, you know, as clear as possible what we were trying to accomplish with it and how it was kind of a balance of, you know, the with the humor and the pathos and everything, and just be, and that it wasn't, you know, a spoof, it wasn't a horror movie, it wasn't a family film, just be very dotted in a tone. And so I don't know, it was just through exposition trying to make it you know, just as clear with the scene descriptions and action what was going on in the interior lives of the Sasquatches.
These outfits, the prosthetics are really gorgeous. And they're, I think, much like everything else I've been saying about this film, it's like these look familiar. We automatically understand that, okay, this is what a Bigfoot would look like, but each are very different, unique, call to mind Great Apes, as well as like conjuring forth other films in a good way, in a complimentary way. Steve Newburn, I believe, did the prosthetics.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of interaction with the people that had worked on like Harry and the Hendersons, or I'm thinking specifically Bobcat Goldthwait, who did Willow Creek and is a big Squatchy nerd and also a comedian. I figured maybe those worlds might cross over. Any kind of interaction with those other Squatchy filmmakers and creatives?
Oh, I mean, Bobcat's a friend of ours, and he told us about his experience, you know, on the Bigfoot circuit and everything. But in terms of consultation, we based it on the, you know, the just imagery that people are familiar with as a foundation, and just that, you know, so you have kind of an entry point, you know, and a certain level of familiarity from the outset with them, and then personalizing it from there, and kind of, you know, and Steve Newbern kind of took that and then, you know, and then yeah, added his own touches to it in the creation of the four different characters.
It's a silly question, but during the filming of this, since you were in the Willow Creek area, Humboldt County, were there sightings of you guys as Sasquatch? Were people almost taken aback because they saw you? Yes, it's a production, it's a crew, but anybody that saw you guys in costume, it's like, holy crap, okay, this is legit, and Bigfoot is doing reality TV now. I don't know, anything like that?
We were too remote, I think. Yeah. There's one day where this pivotal moment where Jesse's character has a sexual awakening, and is going through this, you know, kind of this epiphany. And right when we're and it's with this like slow zoom, and he's standing, you know, up in this like this moss covered tree, and right when we're filming that, this woman in you know, jogging spandex gear goes running by, and she was completely nonplussed. It was just like she was in the zone and it meant nothing. And if there's one moment where we thought maybe we'd have like a human interaction or someone from the outside like reacting, it would be that. And even that, it meant nothing to her.
Jesse and Christoph, for this, I mean, when you're an actor and you're doing a film, I think a lot of times studio executives and agents and everything would probably not be thrilled when the actor wants to do a role where they're entirely covered and unrecognizable. It's not always the thing that they want. And yet I was curious for you both, was this like a freeing experience? Was this because you could perform and it really was less about the face and more about the physicality, but also separating yourself from, I hate to say the brand, but from the actor that everybody knows? Jesse, you want to start on that?
Sure. And just to, for the record, like my agent, his name is Zach Kaplan at CAA. He's like, he read this and his reaction was, you absolutely have to do this. What can I do to help make this movie? So in defense of agents, like, and also as a reference point for the script and its quality, like it was immediately obvious that this thing is amazing. And like actors, agents, like people who like live in the world of film know that this kind of thing is an unbelievable gem because they come along so rarely, something that's actually unusual and also really, really good. And so like, that wasn't like a hesitation or anything. No, I mean, and then in like, so in terms of like, you know, not like perpetuating my own image in the world more was not like a hesitating thing. there's a thing you do like in acting class, like one day you'll, you know, you bring in masks and you wear a mask and you think, oh, this is going to be awkward. I'm in a mask. And of course, what happens to everybody is the epiphany that you realize that you're more free when you're no longer thinking of your own vanity or thinking of your own face being the thing that you're self-conscious about that other people are going to react to. And so that this movie was like the ultimate extreme of that. I mean, you were in this suit that is so, it's such a physical presence on your body that you don't really even have the wherewithal to behave like yourself. And then the actual behavior that we were doing in the movie is so unusual and so funny and childlike and sad and, you know, less ego, more id. And so there was just no way to almost like bring yourself fully to it. It was just physically an impossibility.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to add to this sort of free nature of this, Christoph or Nathan?
Yeah, my experience, I've worked probably more in costume than out of costume. And I've kind of been trying to pull away from that in my career because I want more of my face shown. When I received the script and the lookbook, I just wanted to do it. I was so hopeful that I would be selected and be called to do this. I love the script. I thought the lookbook was beautiful. I've worn so many prosthetics in my career, and I've never really had to have the weight on the emotion that gets pushed through the prosthetics. I played a lot of demons that are just supposed to be scary and kind of one-dimensional. This was not that. This was such a refreshing change from that experience, where you know, this character has emotion. It matters to see the eyes and to see what's happening in, you know, in those windows, and to see the expression on the face and the relationship with all the other characters. So this was such a pleasure for me, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it, because I think the film is beautiful, I think the script is beautiful, and it also was just so much fun.
Yeah, and David and I have, you know, we've been making movies since we were kids, and especially when we were younger, running around with a VHS camera, a lot of our movies were spoofs on what was popular at the time, or spoofs on horror movies, and we would do our own makeup effects and stuff like that, and a lot of special effect artists were our heroes growing up. And so, you know, flash forward to now, like, to be able to work at this level with this kind of creature design and prosthetics was, you know, something that we've always kind of wanted to do, you know. So that was a bucket list thing for us.
And to that point, we never wanted to do, like, you know, motion capture or, you know, VFX elements. We wanted, you know, prosthetic creatures and especially because we wanted the performances to not be dictated by computers. We wanted to them to be able to, you know, act and emote through the makeup themselves and humanize it in that way. So that's why we never wanted to use, you know, like contacts or do VFX eyes or anything. It was very important for us that the eyes were kept human. And a nice plus that everyone other than Nathan has, you know, amazing blue eyes that really stand out and are so expressive. I think those were all elements that we felt like helped create a certain, like, relatability on a human level.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Nathan, but you don't have eyes that match up to your brothers.
It fit the alpha.
I know, yeah. My eyes aren't
as beady
sexy.
Little eyes.
Beady little squinty eyes.
I mean, as you said, the eyes make this relatable in so much of what it's, there's these moments where I was writing down, like, they're just like humans, smart enough to act stupid and get themselves into trouble. You know, things that normal animals might be smart enough, aware enough to avoid. And then there's this Bambi level threat in the form of humans, this tension that's really palpable. It's really kind of scary and unsettling. And we've seen in the trailer this big red X on a tree. Was that full-on Zellner Brothers? Was that any of the influence of Ari Aster being an executive producer on this, along with a lot of other EPs, including Jesse? Where did that kind of tension come in? Was that just on the page and executed from the beginning?
From the beginning, I think we're less interested in seeing the humans and more like the impact of humans is the threat, because I think the impact will be around a lot longer than humans were. And it was something about what they're leaving behind that was more interesting than anything the humans would be doing, especially since it's from the perspective of the creatures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Usually, like these movies, like we've been saying, is a lot, especially lately, it's a lot of horror movies with Bigfoot, and so it's, you know, they're always seen as the threat. And if we're gonna do a movie that's from the Sasquatch's point of view and like their experience, then it would make sense that humans are the boogeyman in that scenario, and sort of like
The mysterious outside force
that you never kind of see and don't really understand, and yet it's affecting you in certain ways.
Yeah. We're running down on time, but I have to ask about the Octopus Project and the music of this film and just the sound design overall. It's so critical, I think, to just the execution of it. It feels wild at times. It feels just large in scope, epic in scope. I want to get your impressions and the interactions with the Octopus Project, how you got them on board, what you told them you needed from them, and just that end product, seeing that with the film, like what you were thinking, that reaction. Jesse, I want to start from your perspective on it as well, and I want to hear from everybody on it, because it's worth hearing about.
Well, I mean, I love this soundtrack as a viewer. It feels like Americana, like, you know, like folk music from the Old West. And then a lot of the music is like these kind of more surreal elements that support the eeriness of some parts of the movie. And then just like, I feel in such great difference to them because like their scenes, as David mentioned, there's this scene where like my character comes into his own sexuality. And I remember shooting the scene. I'm just standing there like on a little tree bed with my arms out. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I don't understand. And David and Nathan just said, no, don't worry, just stand there. I'm like this? I'm not doing anything. And they're like, no, it's gonna be fine. And you watch the movie and there's this insane, like melodramatic, but totally fitting music cue under that. And it totally supports me. And it's this weird thing that I never remember when I'm acting in a movie, which is that like, there are so many other elements besides like what you're doing, including camera, other things, you know, that account for what makes the movie. And so sometimes you just do stand there.
Yeah. It really adds heart to the Sasquatch attempted sex. And I've seen the Octopus Project in Austin, the great band, but now like I really want this score. But and you know, from the Austin boys, like Zellner's, like kind of speak to that as well.
Yeah, and there were the soundtrack. We have a great soundtrack for it coming out on vinyl by Mutant Records, and it's going to be a really cool package. We've worked with them for, I mean, they've been friends of ours for like 20 years, and we've done tons of short films together and music videos, and then they've scored several of our films. So it's pretty, in the same way Nathan and I have worked together. After a while, you have a shorthand, and so they kind of know what we're going for, and we'll use some musical references. And some movie references, and it's more about just like it's less intellectualized and more just about like a feel we're trying to hit. I mean, it's my references are I don't know if they're too obscure, but like this band called Popol Vuh that did all of Werner Herzog's early films, kind of like I wanted a mix of that, and then this Miles Davis album Bitches Brew, which is really bananas. I always loved it, and so just those just kind of helped to create a certain mood. We wanted a combo of those, that sort of feel.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate your time. The film Sasquatch Sunset, it's really, it is funny, but just really beautiful, and it stuck with me. I look forward to seeing it again tonight at the premiere, and hopefully running into you fine folks. But thank you. Thanks for making this. It's a really lovely movie. So, and I look forward to chatting with you guys again in the future.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that was the cast and creative team of Sasquatch Sunset. It is in theaters now. And like I said, it's a weird one, but I mean that in a complimentary way. I happen to really enjoy it, and I already saw it a couple times. It is moving, and I recommend checking it out. I'm Aaron Sagers, and this has been Talking Strange. Until next time, be kind, stay spooky, and keep it weird.
Talking Strange is a part of the Den of Geek Network, available wherever you listen to other podcasts. If you like what we're doing, share Talking Strange with your friends and fellow spooky nerds. And please, subscribe, rate, and leave a nice review. If you have a strange or paranormal story you would like to share with us, please email talkingstrange@denofgeek.com for a chance to have it read on a future episode. For video episodes of Talking Strange, check out twitch.tv/denofgeektv and youtube.com/denofgeekus. And please follow @talkstrangepod on Twitter and @AaronSagers on Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon for more paranormal pop culture content.